Here we go, the John Curley, Sherry Ehrlicher Show. Without interruption, no technical problems. But again, if for some reason this goes down, you guys will spend the next 15 to 20 minutes talking about how much you miss me. Okay? To give it like a eulogy.
Okay.
All right?
All right.
Got it?
We're on board.
Got it. Abigail.
This is definitely a recipe for disaster. Because John's feed, I feel like we'll inevitably go back down, and then John's definitely going to be upset with whatever. Even expressing our love is not, there's no way it's going to satisfy him. He will listen to the show back to in the bath tonight, and he will come back furious on Friday at both of us.
With again, whatever that we left out
exactly,
or we didn't say or yes.
By the way, I am still here. Succulent, I'm not. Save all this. Gee whiz. All right. So the DOJ told the IRS to remove the special investigation team that was investigating, quote, a controversial or political figure. Basically, it was Hunter Biden. They're not allowed to say, but that's who it was. So the entire team that was investigating it was taken off. The DOJ told the IRS, get rid of the team. So they got rid of the team. And one of the reasons they did, they're saying, well, there's no retaliation. If you want to call the hotline as a whistleblower, we'll give you the information. But they took it away. I got to give CBS a lot of credit because, you know, it's a big story when it's not in the Washington Post and the New York Times. So this guy comes forward, and Jacob, you're going to have to fire this down. So this, the man that had been working on this particular case, had been with the IRS, I think, for like 14 years or something like that. He's one of the whistleblowers explaining that they were, the people above him were slow walking and taking unusual steps when it came to the information that we're finding out about Hunter Biden's tax returns. Here's this IRS agent.
When I took control of this particular investigation, I immediately saw it, you know, it was way outside the norm of what I've experienced in the past.
Gary Shapley is a supervisory special agent for the IRS, where he's worked for 14 years. In January 2020, he was assigned to what he calls a high-profile investigation.
Who's the subject of the investigation?
I can't confirm or deny the subject of this investigation.
Why not?
Because, you know, part of the tax secrecy laws don't allow it.
Shapley can't say it, but CBS News has learned the investigation was the probe of Hunter Biden by the Trump-appointed U.S. attorney in Delaware. Senior Biden administration officials have vowed to let it run its course without interference.
It's not restricted in his investigation in any way.
But CBS News has obtained this letter Shapley's lawyers sent to Congress Monday, alleging irregularities in DOJ's handling of the investigation. Shapley is seeking legal protections from Congress so he can share specifics of his allegations.
There was multiple steps that were slow walked at the direction of the Department of Justice.
Had you ever encountered that before?
I have not, no. These deviations from normal process, that, and each and every time it seemed to always benefit the subject.
Shapley says he decided to blow the whistle after a heated meeting last October with federal prosecutors.
It was my red line meeting. It just got to that point where that switch was turned on, and I just couldn't silence my conscience anymore.
Did you let prosecutors know you were unhappy?
I don't think I can answer that.
Hunter Biden has denied any wrongdoing.
Like civil servants.
The IRS agent told us he is a registered Republican. His whistleblowing is being assisted by an advocacy group with past ties to the GOP. But Shapley says this is not about politics.
Why do you want to navigate these waters?
Well, I don't want to do any of this. I took an oath of office, and when I saw the egregiousness of some of these things, it no longer became a choice for me. It's not something that I want to do. It's something that I feel like I have to do.
Mm-hmm. This story will go away, by the way. He will testify on Friday, but it will be closed to the press, and the public will not hear his testimony.
This investigation has been going on for 5 years now. which is, when you think about it, I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's potential outstanding tax debt from his time as a board member of the Burisma company, as well as a false statement for a gun purchase. So these are not, you know, I mean, this is something that they could have figured out relatively quickly, you think. But 5 years now.
Mm-hmm. The IRS has been weaponized before. There's plenty of examples of it. The DOJ has been weaponized before. We've seen it before. And they've done it again. But again, when do you make this a story? CBS puts it out there. It's going to not get any legs. Unless the rest of the media and slash Democrats want to take Biden down, you can start to heap a whole bunch of this stuff on him, because then eventually you'd be able to see connections possibly between Hunter's IRS tax returns and the 10% to the big guy. And where is that investigation? Where is the blood in the water where the press starts to ask all these questions? They don't want to. They don't want to ask. They don't want you to find out. This is part of the corruption of the entire government. And the fact that this guy's like, look, I tried to tell him about it. They got rid of the entire investigation team. The whole team's gone. So who's in there now? Do you start all over again? Do you handpick the people that are supposed to be in there investigating this, making sure they're the right people that aren't going to be whistleblowers? Just the corruption. I mean, it's a banana republic sort of operation. Just, it's pathetic. But again, let's remember, we don't want it in any way. We don't want no threats on democracy. Let's not have any threats on democracy. Oh my gosh, democracy. Oh, the January 6th rioting. There was a threat against democracy. How about this? How about this is a threat against democracy? How about just the fact that parts of the government are stopping other parts of the government from investigating what could be wrongdoing because they want to protect their guy? Is that not a threat to democracy?
Whew. And I wonder what this guy gets out of it, because, you know, whistleblowers often do this because they get a piece of the action if there's a big settlement or whatever happens. Yeah. I don't see this, that doesn't seem to be the case here, right? There's no money to be made, by him coming forward, right? He can't profit from this particular action. So he's doing it. Yes, he's a Republican, but he's doing it because he felt like this was outlandish how much time it was taking, and the fact that he never had seen anything like this before that should not have been, you know, interrupted like it had been.
Well, remember how brave all the whistleblowers were that were coming before and talking about Trump and the phone call that he made to Ukraine and the, you know, all, and they were so brave. What is that guy's name? Vitman or whatever, they standing there in his Vitman. Military uniform. Vitman, yeah. And then he wrote a book about it. Oh God, it was to stand up against Trump, and he was just an amazing individual. Why can't we find more heroes like him? Well, how about this guy? Nope. Silence. Crickets from the Post. Crickets from the New York Times. ABC did a story. I looked up to see ABC did a story on local news or local weather. NBC did something as well. Then they did something on Target. You know, they're not going to cover it. Just let it go. Because again, they don't want to rock the boat. That's their guy. You got a great, mentally incompetent individual that you can basically have him read most of the words that are written down on the teleprompter and just run roughshod over anybody that's sitting there behind the big desk at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Flight attendants giving some rules of etiquette for everybody that you haven't flown in a while, or maybe you're going to be heading out this summer. And we just heard from Aaron that apparently SeaTac is going to see more people flying out for Memorial Day weekend. And they've written through, oh, it's a list. I hate lists. But just hit some of your favorites on here that you've never done, Sherry.
Clean up after kids. Let's see.
You don't have kids.
Okay. Let's see. No one wants to hear your FaceTime conversation. So that's stop good. With the speakerphone thing. I think that's a good one. This is my favorite. Keep your socks on. How about this? Mm. Keep your shoes on completely. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. You can move your seat back. You can recline your seat, but there's a proper way to do it. Don't just push it back. You need to politely ask the person or make sure that the person doesn't have the tray table out and a laptop on it and say, would you mind if I recline my seat? Here's one that kind of surprised me and grossed me out. Flush. Evidently, there are people that can't find the flush button in the lavatories. And she's saying, if you can't find it, please let them know and they'll help you flush.
This doesn't stop me from flushing anything, but I will say I'm a little bit frightened by the toilets on airplanes.
By the loud,
not, I don't appreciate that, Andrew.
You're not supposed to sit on it when you flush. You're supposed to be standing.
Right. Yes? I heard that's okay. Terrible old wives' tales or whatever you'd call them, urban legends about that, being able to suck your insides out into the
danger
thing. I know. Oh, I've heard that. That if you flush while you're sitting, that the amount of force
pull at
can,
your large intestines. Yeah.
Right.
You pull your entire large intestines out. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know what it is.
They're like just 48 feet. You have 48 feet of large intestines. So it would grab part of it, and then you'd be able to walk back all the way back to coach about 47 feet until all of a sudden, bang! Now Jacob's Googling how large is your large intestine.
I don't want to learn any more about this, no.
All right. Can I have a couple rules?
Yeah.
Don't wear your pajamas. Stop wearing pajamas. And by the way, if your kid is, that just wants to be comfortable. Nope. Nobody wants to see your teenage kid or you walking around in pajamas at an airport. No slippers, no pajamas.
Are you talking like full on top matches bottom? Are you talking
pajama pants? The person's got this sloppy sweatshirt on and then the pajama pants on with bananas or Fred Flintstone heads or some stupid thing. And they're slogging through the airport and they've got their bag and the kid's like, their pajamas. Put some clothes on. All right. The fact that you pajamas on tells me you got out of bed, and I'm going to assume you got out of bed and you went into the car and then went to the airport with your gross pajamas on. Put some clothes on. Have some respect for yourself and everybody else around you.
And if you did that, you probably didn't brush your teeth, which is really gross.
Oh, that's not even thought of in the entire equation. But people look like they were in bed, and then the next minute, the magic, like, airplane fairy came to them and bing! And they spun around, and now, oh my gosh, I'm in the airport now.
I think it's more about comfort, where they think of the airplane as a couch or a comfy chair, even though it's not. And so, therefore, they're not going to wear something that's binding or tight or whatever. So, why not just wear your drawstring pants? Did we lose John?
It happened again. It's just, it's like that. It's just gone.
Here's my other suspicion, is that his connection is fine. He just wants us to say nice things about him. So he's just sitting there in silence, pretending that it doesn't work. But
One, miss him already. I don't know about you guys, but I am a little bereft. I'm not sure. How are we going to go on without him?
Yeah, Jacob? No. The thing that I miss most about John is about he's back. Wow, you missed it, John.
I will be listening tonight.
You won't be disappointed.
And I better have heard some tears. I better have heard one of you choke up.
Almost.
Were getting there. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a matter of time.
Thank you. All right. One last thing is the fact that apparently SeaTac Airport is among the least angry airports in the country. I questioned this study, but they looked at Twitter, and I guess they looked at all the different airports and how many people tweeted horrible things about, the line is awful, or TSA is awful, or this or that's awful, or whatever. And they found out that Seattle has the least amount of angry people going through the airport.
Yeah, but it's not that low. 42% of tweets directed at SeaTac were still considered angry. But compared to, say, John Wayne Airport in Orange County, 65% were angry tweets. Jacksonville, Florida, the airport in Omaha, Nebraska, Tampa, Florida, these were also in the top 10 of the angriest tweets. So still 42%, that's still pretty high.
But don't you think people that are on Twitter and tweeting stuff out are normally tweeting things that are high on sort of the human response level, either really, oh my gosh, this is the best taco I've ever had, picture of it, hashtag great taco, or oh my god, I'm standing in line, I'm literally dying, TSA lines are so long, hashtag literally dying, TSA, hashtag. Aren't those the people that are using Twitter anyway? Are they more likely to complain?
Well, sure. I mean, Twitter is not about the mediocre. Twitter is about the extreme, you know?
Hashtag so it's mediocre. Either
you love it or hate it. That's why you would tweet something out.
Mm-hmm. I went to have lunch with somebody the other day, and I like the guy. He's a nice guy. I'm talking about some business stuff. And when they put the meal down in front of him, which happened to be beef stroganoff, he took out his phone and took a picture of it. And immediately I was like, ugh. That's going to cost you 7 points.
And that's so old school. Like, does any who does that anymore? I mean, that was.
You mean order beef stroganoff?
Well, that too. I was going to wonder about that, but I didn't want to bring it up. But that, yeah, I mean, nobody takes pictures of food anymore. That was back like 10 years ago when people were posting stuff on Facebook.
Yeah. I thought, like, this guy could be my friend. And then when that happened, I was like, nope, I'm going to have to write him off. Sorry.
You could give him another chance.
I can't.
Otherwise, was he okay as a person?
It soiled the whole meal for me. I couldn't even look at him at that point.
Okay. Well, okay.
Sorry. And I know Jacob always takes pictures of his food.
No, he doesn't.
All right.
I
was only off the air for less than a minute.
Right.
A half,
we didn't have a lot of time, yeah.
To work yourself up. right.
Hopefully next time it's longer.
A lot of keening where you're rolling back and forth, leaning and crying. I want to hear some keening next time.
Okay.
Here we go. John Curley, Sherry Ellinger Show. And you, yes, you. You're a big part of the show. You can text us 1-888-973-5476 or come on in at mynorthwest.com. Either way, all doors are open. We'd love to hear from you. Hitting the topics, a little combination newstainment. Oh, boy. I happen to make the mistake of mentioning that I picked up a black futon that was on the side of the road that said free on it. Over on, my sister told me about it. She goes, it was on Chestnut Street in Philadelphia. She goes, I remember that. And she goes, did you remember that it had rained on the thing? And the reason you needed my help is because it was so heavy. I had forgotten that part of the story. She goes, there's one more thing you've cut out about how I helped you in life. Mm-hmm. I said, Lore, everybody was judging me. Judgy on the black futon. Sherry made fun of it. She goes, I told you this probably wasn't a good idea, but you needed something. I even have a picture. She goes, I'll send you a photograph of yourself laying on it.
Ugh.
Naked.
Okay. Oh. No.
It's coming your way, girly girl.
No. Do not do that.
No. For research.
Okay.
Hang on.
Should I look now before I go get the Clorox for my eyes?
It'll be over to you shortly. But the important thing is that then Jacob found this story about this woman who allegedly found, how much is the couch? What was it?
It's like, I mean, it's called a bubble couch. They have different estimates on how much it costs. They said it could cost up to $8,000, but then other people chimed in and said, this is a knockoff. It's not that worth that much money. So she found it on the street. You were way ahead of your time, by the way. If TikTok had existed then, you could have gotten millions of views from the black futon.
Here it is.
Hi guys, this is me finding an $8,000 couch in the middle of the street. Here's a quick story time. It was pouring raining and I was walking home and I saw this couch in the middle of the street and I called my dad begging him to come pick it up because I couldn't just leave that couch there. He told me no, it was not possible. But then he surprised me and showed me that he did pick up the couch and he had it in his work office. But the couch was very dirty, so he said we had to clean it. So we got all the things we needed to clean it, some soap, water, a vacuum. And that's my sister using a little machine thing. And I was very interested in how that works because I think she was doing it wrong. But as you see, that was me scrubbing my life away to make sure this couch gets as clean as possible. I don't know why she thought that was a good idea, but that's satisfying right there. Very satisfying. And then I got tired, so I let them do all the work. Look how dirty it was.
Okay.
This
okay,
is the after
okay,
we had.
Okay. Oh, my God. I'm having a seizure. Is anyone else? Was it the music? Was it her?
It's her. Yes, it's her. Okay. Yeah, she's.
Does this end with a great big sort of payoff? Or
no.
Just her
no.
No.
We okay. should not Fine. Listen Fine. To more.
No, thank you. Thank you, doctor. Okay. Was it a bubble couch? Was it an $8,000 bubble couch? Whatever
I
that
don't
is.
Think she said that she got it outside of a very expensive building in New York City and that it's not uncommon for rich people just to dispose of their things because, according to her, they throw away their furniture every other year. So it had stains on it. It had, and then she's a follow up video where she talks about how people criticized her for not getting it professionally cleaned. And she brought up the fact that all she showed in the video was 5 minutes of cleaning, but really it went on for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so on and so forth. Yeah.
All right. Okay. All right. I spared you the photo of me laying nude on the futon. I just sent you a picture of the futon.
I saw, it was confusing though. I zoomed in a lot looking for a naked you know, something.
Oh, you know what? You know what you should do? You ought to zoom in on your face looking in the mirror.
Okay.
Take a good hard look at yourself and start to question why. Why? Why?
I'm looking at the picture right now. Clearly, this was before your dedication to making your bed every day. Because I'm not sure if I'm more disturbed by the black futon or the mess around it.
I know. I was struggling with a bunch of stuff in my life. But it looks like, you know, that would be one of the photos, and then there'd be another photo with a chalk outline of where the body was found. Doesn't it have that kind of look to it?
Yeah, it sure does.
Yes. Well, speaking of that, Swedish death cleaning became the new tidy up. So the idea is that when someone passes away, you get in there and you take all the stuff that they own and you just clear it all out, send it off to a thrift store, do whatever else you're going to do with it and just be gone with it. Is that the Swedish death cleaning?
No. That's what you do. No, not at all. Yes. In fact, that's what usually happens. Swedish death cleaning is that it gets done before you have to go through that or someone else has to do it. And now there's a couple of TV shows about this called Death Cleaners. One of them is Death Cleaners. It's narrated by Amy Poehler. And they say, isn't this a little sad and morbid to be cleaning your stuff out before you die, because you know you're going to die. Mm-hmm. And this Swedish woman that's sort of the expert in this says, no, what's sad and morbid is amassing a bunch of stuff and not really appreciating it or using it or whatever. And they're saying, uh-huh, do this before you die. And it's a kind of an American phenomenon, according to the Swedes, who are minimalists to some degree. She believes because we come from a shopping culture that we just have so much stuff. And half of it we don't need, and we shouldn't be overly sentimental about, you know, do we really need our high school trophies? Do we really need, you know, the set of china that's been in the storage unit for 17 mm-hmm. years? I mean, these are the things you should get rid of, pass on, donate, do whatever. So it's this massive cleaning that you do so no one else has to do it when you die.
Yeah. So is there something in your house that you would save if your house was on fire?
No. My dogs.
I know that. I mean, no photo albums. Mm-mm. Nothing. No.
I'm not terribly sentimental.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably. This is going to sound a little weird. I have my dad's ashes in an urn. I have my dad's ashes in an urn, and I would probably want to save that.
Okay.
But I mean, no, I have a lot of nice stuff. I have really good stuff. I just don't think.
Wow.
I wouldn't run back into a burning building and risk my life to save anything. Is there anything you would, maybe my wedding ring?
Well, I went in to clean out my dad's closet and I thought, well, I'm going to save something of his and it'll mean something. So I saved one of his polo shirts, one of his golf shirts, and it hangs in my closet to this day. And I see it and every once in a while I'm like, I saved it, and then I see it, and then I feel bad that I don't feel more about it. I'm like, there it is. There's a shirt. And then it's weird just chucking it all out. I thought, I'll save something of his. I saved his golf club and his shirt. But it's just a shirt that doesn't fit me now that's got moth holes in it, and it's got a bunch of mustard stains on it.
There were some examples of people talking about that in this article, saying they felt really guilty because they had an item or something from someone that had passed on. And she's saying, don't feel guilty about that. You're not throwing away the memories. You're not throwing away your love. It's a thing. And if it doesn't mm-hmm. serve you, it's time to move on. Make the space for something else.
Multiple mustard stains on a single item of clothing?
My father was the worst at playing golf, and then he'd come around to get the 11th hole. He'd stop and get a hot dog, but he always got mustard all over it. Yeah. And even when we buried him in a pair of pants that he liked to play golf in that also had mustard stains on it.
Okay.
And the guy was like, Mr. and Mrs. Curley, just want to let you know that your father's pants are pretty badly stained with mustard. And we're like, yeah, we know. We chose that. Okay. All right. Very good. Very good.
I just feel like once you make
overly obsequious undertaker guy,
I feel like once you've made the mustard mistake once, like you improve over time, and he didn't care.
Nope. Okay. Nope. Didn't care. Didn't know. And you get that. You get some mustard.
Didn't know.
And then you do that thing where he did the thing where he like tries to brush it off like it's lint, but then he just smears it. No. Oh. Didn't care. Dad, you get some mustard up here in your forehead. Huh? Wow, look at all the letters are pouring in. Teeny Tiny's working hard. When she wears that cute little terry cloth sweatband around her forehead, and she's got them on her wrists as well. Come on, Sherry. I know you got a soft spot for her.
That's a little 90s.
Hard. All we are doing is talking about my dress and my hair.
No, we're talking about your sweatband around your head.
It's kind of a Jane Fonda look.
Yeah, she's got leg warmers on. All right, hey, a little bit of feedback from everybody. Oh, boy. The natives are upset. Yeah, people are upset about Hunter Biden. 253 says it's probably the reason Biden wants to run for president again, just like Trump, to protect himself and his son from criminal charges. I'll take it.
Yeah, 425 says you should talk about Matt Taibbi and the IRS showing up and leaving a note on his door.
Hot take. I'm going to run that one into the ground. Harm reduction, 206 says if it seems people have a hard time understanding the difference between enabling and compassion. Enabling someone is to continue on their downward spiral is not compassion. Allowing somebody to live in a tent till they die and hang halfway out of a tent for a pastor, for a passerby, just like you casually walk by this dead person, that is not compassion. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Jeff in Port Angeles says the former junkie is more qualified to console than the 4-year degree. There are plenty of formerly addicted people that would be glad to have degrees paid for.
That's Jeff. I know Jeff. He writes me all the time. Hi, Jeff. Yeah, he has quite the story. I think we had him on once talking about he was a Marine and then got addicted to drugs and then was all sorts of messed up. He's been able to turn his life around. 253, is Sherry going to write a book of all the jobs she's ever had? Holy cow. Not a joke. That's all right. Nothing wrong having a lot of jobs. Sherry, that's
no,
okay.
No,
life experiences. Yeah.
I'm proud of it. Here's something about the feedback segment. Roger in University Place says, by the way, am I the only one who hears a similarity between the feedback song and the theme song for Land of the Lost?
On a routine expedition, met the greatest earthquake ever known. High on the rapids, it struck their tiny raft.
Yeah, really?
Now that song doesn't have any goats in it, so it's very different.
That was with the Slee Stacks, wasn't it? Wasn't that Holly, Will, and something or other, and the Slee Stacks coming after them, and they were in the Land of the Lost? Wasn't that it?
I think so. Do you think that Andrew could doctor up the feedback song like he does the letters song?
Yeah, he could add a lot. He's got lots of time on his hands. Yeah.
I already added a lot. I don't know if I can add anymore. It's bursting at the seams right now.
But you know what I'm looking for.
Talk about the connection that keeps dropping. Fox LNG. Jacob. Just say that he lit up a room and you're good. This is if I told everybody that the connection goes down for some reason, then just they should be utilizing me.
Eulogizing?
Eulogizing me. Sorry. Uh-huh. I wish my connection went down just before I tried to say that word. John and Black Diamond, grade A production today, guys. Maybe you guys should think about moving to Twitter space. Yeah, that Twitter thing was really uncomfortable. 400,000 people tried to log on and watch when Ron DeSantis made the big announcement. And man, it was awkward. But here's the good news. What if nobody logged on? Or what if only 30,000 people logged on, right?
Well,
wouldn't that
and
have been
pitching
a story?
They're pitching it as he broke the internet because he's so popular. I heard 900,000 people were trying to, which was a record for Twitter.
Oh. Okay. Well, look up government websites crash, and there's quite the list. Yeah. There you go. And Andrew's going to add more to that song. All right, Sherry, because I know what you're looking for.
Thank you.
You are big in the scatological department.